the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site, covering the Arizona Cardinals. And we are recording on a Tuesday night following Final Cutdown Day. With me is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth is actually, we've got him on PUP right now as well, just like Kyler Murray, as he is dealing with some injury issues and recovering from stuff. How are you doing, even managing to do podcast duty today?
Yeah, this is the first day I've been up and about. I left the house for about an hour today, which was, you don't realize how long 5 days in the house is until you stay in the house for five straight days and you're like, oh my goodness, this is ridiculous. But yeah, recovery, you know, it's going to be a long 6 weeks. We're 5 days in. I'm not that I'm counting.
We at least can get him for, he can't do full practices. He's ineligible to practice, but he can be in meetings like when we get together and connect via Google Meet to record our show. So yeah. So and this show, episode 456, this is the aftermath of the Arizona Cardinals' final cuts. They have a 53-man roster, which technically right now is 52 players, and we're here to break it all down. We're going to break down position by positions, our takeaways, the surprises, because wouldn't you say that the way they constructed their initial 53-man roster is really kind of odd, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really odd. And like you said, we're going to get into it, but it was interesting to see one, and maybe I missed it. They only have 52 guys right now.
Correct. They only have 52. That tells me there's a move that hasn't been announced. I don't know if it's trade or if it was a street free agent. That's not dealing with the waiver stuff, but there's a pending move that they know is happening. So,
right. Right, or they know that they're number three on the waiver wire and there's three guys that at the same position that they'll take, and they'll take whichever one they get, right?
Well even if I think it's something other than that, because even if it were a waiver thing, they know they have to cut somebody anyway. You'd just keep another player until you don't.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see the mind of Monty Austin Fort. And, you know, we'll find out when Jonathan Gannon speaks, but like what his input on these things are. We know towards the end, it was really Steve Keim driven, right? Like the roster moves were heavily Steve Keim based. And so if it's a collaboration, I'd love to hear Gannon's input on.
But we won't. He doesn't tell us anything.
I do think. And we'll get to it. I do think the numbers on defense speak to Gannon's influence immediately. Because, again, you're talking about, you know, you're talking about a defensive coach. And when the numbers come out like they did, and I'm not even talking about the players.
I know. It's just your, what is it, 28, 29 on defense? It's absurd.
But 14 on that front, four or five, depending on how they run it. 14. You're like, oh yeah, this is a defensive head coach. Like this guy does not want to give up any of his guys. And you know, it'll just be interesting to see how that plays out. And that was more to me what a question would become. You know, like you can look at a name, you know, at the bottom, right? Like Owen Popoa, and you're like, you know what they see in him and why he made the roster. But you know, on the flip side, like
Ben Stilley?
It's like,
that's, yeah. That's the guy. I'm like, what? Ben Stilley?
And the Chris Boyd signing or keeping, you know, him. I was like, okay.
That's a Jeff Rogers move, I think. Well, we'll get to that. But let's start with the quarterback position. Let's start with the quarterback position because, well, the first unexpected move was Kyler Murray was moved to the regular season PUP, which means, and I've expected this the entire time. It makes sense for the timeline. He has to miss 4 weeks, and then after that, he's eligible to be designated for practice, to designated for return. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means in terms of timeline, because they are tight-lipped about that. They're not trying to put any sort of expectations on them, on him for when he should return. But in terms of from what we were starting to gather, and if we look at kind of the timeline, so middle of October would be a little more than 9 months out of surgery, which would make a reasonable pushed return, like an intent type of turn, like Zach Ertz. Zach Ertz is expected to be playing in week one, and that's about 9 months. And so Kyler being back about week six, which is, honestly, it's where when we did our game-by-game prediction, that was the first game I picked him to come back, and I think that's kind of a sweet spot. But that was not unexpected. But what was unexpected, they cut Colt McCoy. What? I'm still a little bit, I get it, I guess, but I don't. What was your take on the Colt McCoy release?
It just tells me that his arm is completely shot. And we saw a lot of that. You know, it's the irony of everything, right? You look at the memes this offseason, and the one play that gets super highlighted is that play in early in training camp where he underthrows the ball so bad it hits, I believe, Marco Wilson in the head.
In the helmet, yeah.
Yeah. And people are using that as like worst team in the NFL, not going to win a game, blah, blah, blah. And then they cut him, right? And people are like, oh, the tank is on in Arizona. It's like, well, I know it makes for fun tweets and memes and post on Instagram and TikTok and all that stuff, but you can't have it both ways. You can't be like, oh, if this is their starting quarterback, worst team in the NFL, and then be like, the tank is on, they cut Colt McCoy.
Remember, in our predictions, I didn't you have them maybe two wins? I had them having winning one game in the first five. In the first five games. And that was a stretch, right? That was them stealing a win against the Giants in the home opener with Colt McCoy. But even still, I'll trust their football judgment, but I still think for a team that's trying to win games, I mean, that's what they're trying to do. They're going to try and compete with the guys that they have. I felt he was the safest bet to bridge the gap to Kyler Murray, because Clayton Tune, as a rookie, his variance in play is going to be far more disastrous. He will make game-changing mistakes. And now I talked about this on the last show. Josh Dobbs doesn't move the needle at all for me. Colt McCoy has a 12-year NFL career, and while he wasn't the franchise guy, he's been well-respected enough to keep around in the locker room for over a decade. And even over the last 2 years, we saw him be able to make plays, not all the time, and last year was a little bit less. But Josh Dobbs, there's nothing that he's done since 2017 coming in the league. He's played in 8 games since 2017 and started twice last year. While he may be as safe as Colt McCoy, he's not a playmaker to me. I don't get that move at all.
It just tells me that they didn't see anything during camp. And, you know, I saw a couple people that are saying like, oh, you know, this is going to leave a sour taste in veterans' mouth. Maybe the veteran treatment was allowing him to go this long, to even split reps, you know, near that 50-50 mark during training camp to see if he had anything left in the tank.
The comment Jonathan Gannett said, like, there was nothing that he didn't show us. Like, there was nothing more he could have done. He basically said Colt was washed without saying he was washed.
And, it makes sense. His arm was that, you know, end of stage Chad Pennington level basically when he came into the league after that.
And
did
that happen? Like, it was kind of funny because we talked about when he started in 2021. Didn't we talk about, hold on, Colt's got more arm than I thought he did. Last year that arm was gone.
Right. And he's had an elbow or is it a shoulder issue the last couple of years with the Cardinals? You know, and so that's the thing is like a guy that's got a bad arm anyways, that has to get it juiced up to make these throws is, you know, not just not long for the NFL, unfortunately. And the fact that Colt got 14 years out of his body is legitimately amazing. And let's be honest, his body did not want to give him 14 years. I mean, he's basically looks like Raggedy Andy out there now, like stitched up. Like you genuinely feel bad for him. And I know it's hard to feel bad for anybody that's made nearly $25 million in their career, but you genuinely feel bad that his body had to take all of that just to get to this point. And, you know, it's just unfortunate that this is the ending, because you would have liked to have seen him, you know, go out in a situation where he could walk away and his body was still working.
Yeah.
And like you said, without saying it, they basically just made the statement of like, this guy he just doesn't have anything left, unfortunately. And it's just, that's all it is. It's just unfortunate. Like, you know, it's the joke we always make. It's such a cliche. Father Time's undefeated for a reason. And, you know, some people, it catches you sooner than later. And right now it caught Colt McCoy. And this will be what's interesting to me. And I don't know how you feel, because we haven't talked about this. But if he doesn't get signed or anything like that, isn't that basically the indictment that the Cardinals made the right move? Because this is a guy that unfortunately can't play anymore. He can mentally, just physically he can't do it.
Yeah. And now, good for him. The deal that he got, they re-signed last offseason. He got the 2-year deal. And that was, I mean, they made that move because that was going to be Cliff Kingsbury. He totally trusted Colt McCoy. But when Kyler got hurt and then they fired Kingsbury, Colt McCoy being on this roster with the contract that he did really was unfortunate for the team, because $2.25 million completely guaranteed. And guess what? Good for Colt. Now he's getting paid $2.25 million to go sit at home. And we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to check in on Colt's family, see if they've got that dog. Because if they got the dog, then we know it's done.
Well, just check out his podcast on Underdog Fantasy, I believe it is. So, like, that was the sign to me that he was cooked, is that it got to the point where it was like, here's the thing.
There's no way he was retiring. No way.
No.
Like, the team cut you because you got $2.25 million on the line for it.
Right. And that's what it is. And, you know, that's what always makes me laugh. And again, we don't know all the ins and outs, but what makes me laugh is that people will bash a football team, you know, blindly, but they'll never be like, hey, Colt, if you're physically unable to do it, why don't you give the money back and retire?
No.
Oh, wait, that's never going to happen. And nobody
knows. I just had this thought. You know why he never considered retiring this offseason? I'm pretty sure it was because of the money. He was scheduled to make the highest salary he's ever made in his career. And, well, granted, there's a lot of pride that he played, but, you know, after everything that happened, it wasn't really a conversation. They still wanted him to play, but financially, what else are you going to do that's going to get you $3.75 million or ultimately? And then basically he put him in a situation like, I'm going to retire. I'm going to come do this. And they, you know, you make them cut you and you still get $2.25 million. Good for Colt. And yeah, I mean, but that contract, I mean, ultimately it ends up being another strike against Colt. Isn't that just another strike against Steve Keim?
I mean, wasn't this entire training camp and the two trades you got to talk about solo last week. I mean, that's basically an indictment of Steve Keim. And yeah, this is, like you said, this is just another kind of mark on his resume in a negative way.
So they keep only two quarterbacks on the active roster to start off. So you've got Clayton Tune, you've got Josh Dobbs. Jonathan Gannon refuses to name a starter. You know, good for him. You know, competitive advantage. Honestly, between Joshua Dobbs and Clayton Tune, there's not a damn thing Washington's going to do differently in their game prep. Is there? Really?
I mean, maybe Tune's slightly more athletic at this point, but yeah, it's not. I mean,
like, that's not a competitive advantage. You're just prepping for the offense, not for the quarterback, because neither one of those quarterbacks is a difference maker. They're both athletic. They both have good arms. I'm just, you know, the little bit of optimism I had of just Colt McCoy being able to caretake his way with some close games, I don't know what to think with those two. Now, for me, the most interesting thing is that, and I thought maybe they would keep three quarterbacks on the roster because of that third quarterback rule, because a practice squad guy does not count. So if you have a quarterback on the practice squad and you elevate him to the roster, let's say third quarterback, he is not eligible to be the emergency third quarterback. So you could finesse it so you call up, you elevate your backup quarterback from the practice squad, make him the backup, and then you make Clayton Tune the emergency quarterback. I could see a scenario with that. But the fact that it's Jeff Driskel who's going to be re-signed / added to the practice squad and not David Blau, I will say this. I don't understand what they're doing at the quarterback position with this team right now.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody does. So we'll just kind of have to wait and see how it plays out. And I know that's a cop-out for a lot of people. But at the end of the day, you know, I think that what Monty and JG have done this offseason kind of allows them to give – or us to give them some rope and trust them right now. And, you know, if in 2 months they're sitting at 0-7 and they're talking about Kyler's not going to play this year and, you know, we're just going to roll forward, then we have some questions that need to be answered, right? But for now, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt in this situation. Just because I've liked how they've gone about things to this point.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. The running back position, honestly, I didn't find it at all surprising. Three running backs on the roster. In fact, I believe on my last, it was the last, my final roster prediction, that is exactly the way that I went. The three running backs they kept on the roster were the three, and I thought they were going to have to cut a running back to keep an extra line, which they ended up doing. But James Conner, Keontae Ingram, he's the number two, and Amari DiMercato. Corey Clement did get cut. He immediately becomes a free agent. And in some ways, some people thought it was a surprise. I mean, I probably shouldn't have, but when one of our local beat writers said, oh, what a surprise when Corey Clement was like, let's be honest, no one should ever be surprised by a cut of a player who played deep in the final preseason game. And Corey Clement got lots of fourth quarter carries. Now, it felt like he went from number two to cut in a matter of like 2 weeks. And maybe that was more because DiMercato developed and Ingram got healthy. Because I don't think that Clement was bad by any means.
No, but I think it's, again, what we talked about. You've got a couple of things, right? You've got a team, and this kind of goes counter to my point. So, like, but you've got a team that looks at what their play style is going to be. It's going to be run the ball, play defense, force teams to go the length of the field. I don't know if that's going to work with how this defense is. We'll find that out. That's a different conversation for a different day. But look at the backs they kept, right? Look at the three backs on the roster, you know, and we can always be, what's the word I'm looking for? Skeptical of how players' weights are listed, right? Like I think that's a fair thing. It's a healthy skepticism, I guess we could say. You know, but DeMercado's the smallest guy at 5'9", 215 pounds. You know, Keontae Agram's 5'11", 221. Connor's listed at 6', you know, 230. I think they said he's down to, what, 225 or whatever. Again, do with the information as you will. But so where did Clement fit in that group? I get that he's a different type of back, but with what they want to do, how they want to utilize their backs, I don't know. You know, well, and
basically, and I'll say this. Like,
but that's the other thing too. Is the NFL lists Clement at 220. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's just as thick. He doesn't look as thick as the other three, I would say.
What's funny is a buddy of mine, Eric Swerson, works for 360 Sport, AZ, Sports 360.
Yeah, Sports 360.
He's a big TCU guy, and I told him, like, watch out for DeMercado. He didn't think DeMercado, but I told him. It was like, he does a lot, and then talk to him. It's like, what did he do at TCU? And he did all the other stuff. He's good at blitz pickup. He can play special teams. He didn't return kicks, but he can return kicks. And that's kind of what we saw. And if we're looking, and I'll be honest, like, he is a younger, slight, like, I'm guessing a more skilled player than Clement or Tyson Williams. But let's not go crazy here. The guys he beat out are meh. Clement, been in the league for a while, but he's all, just meh. And Tyson Williams, meh. Just journeyman. It's cool to see.
Yeah, it's all journeyman backs. Like, it's not like they had, you know, Zeke and Tony Pollard, and you're like, well, they cut Zeke to keep Amari DeMercado, right? Like, it's like, clearly Connor's the one. It feels like clearly Ingram's two, and then DeMercado's the third back, and I assume he's going to be active, because if you carry three backs, I assume you're going to have to have to have them all active.
Yeah, they're all going to be active. He's going to be the guy that plays, like, special teams. I mean, four backs, like, having a fourth back isn't even out of the question.
Not with the roster the way they built it.
But yeah, I mean, there was nothing surprising about that for me for the running back room. But then we go to the wide receiver room, and they kept six. They kept six rather than five. I really only had them keeping five just because of numbers, and the five they kept were no surprise at all. You've got Hollywood, you've got Rondale, you've got Michael Wilson, you've got Zach Pascal, and then you've got Greg Dortch. The guy that sneaked onto the roster is Daniel Arias, and as I looked at – no, I didn't keep him in the final 53 on the last prediction, but after the second game, I was looking at his special teams playing time, and I was like, oh, he was playing the most special team snaps on the team, and that's what he was a stud special teamer at Colorado, and he's got that length. You know, he's kind of that Antoine Wesley guy that you don't know. He's probably not going to do anything offensively, but he's going to give you lots of things, and only he was a very good special teams player at Colorado. So I'm like, if there's room for him, I bet he sneaks onto the roster. And so that didn't surprise me too much about that. I just was surprised that they kept six, especially considering the imbalances across the roster.
Yeah, and it's just, like you said, it's an interesting way to construct a roster, because it feels like he's also the easiest cut if push came to shove. But like you said, if he's being looked at as a...
He's like Trent Sherfield, only taller.
Right, like a potential ace special teamer. It's hard to cut those guys, right?
Yeah, and that's where Jeff Rogers comes in. Like, you know, look, he needs to be on the roster. I need this guy. But, yeah, so the first three positions, not much to talk about. And the next one. So coming up next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, Mr. Cardinals talking about, let's move on. Talk about the next set, kind of group of positions, tight end, offensive line, defensive line. That's coming up next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, Mr. Cardinals talking. We'll be talking about the tight end position. The three, the top three, no surprise. It was just, for me, it was simply, were they going to keep three or four? And if they keep four, I think it's going to be probably Blake Whitehart, the undrafted kid out of Wake Forest. I think he played the most snaps on offense of everyone on the team and played a ton on special teams as well. And I think ultimately that, plus they liked him well enough to guarantee him $200,000 on his rookie contract. So, you know, whether they kept him on the roster, he would have been on the practice squad at least. But I wasn't surprised to see them keep all four, and the guy that they kept was the guy I expected, though. Tongiai was a possibility. We'll see if he ends up on the practice squad, because it kind of feels like that might be the way they go.
Well, and the reason I picked Tongiai over Whitehart was because it felt like Tongiai was getting some of those reps at the fullback H-back, but then obviously, a guy we'll talk about in a little bit, Jesse Luketta ends up getting those reps too. So
I will say, I don't think that's going to happen in the regular season. You're going to use Trey McBride to do that, probably.
Yeah, probably. But, I mean, maybe in a short yardage situation, you do put Luketta in. So, like, you know, that was my thing with Tongiai, but Whitehart, you know, it makes sense. They loved him. He catches the ball well, right? Like, there's no – he did a nice job during this entire process, showing out and being a guy that can, you know, play. So, it's always cool to see this guys like that end up playing well and doing good things. And, again, another guy that has – really good experience on kick and punt coverage teams. I know we're talking way too much about special teams, guys, but like,
but that matters on a roster. That matters,
and especially on a roster where you're looking at it and go, we need every guy to contribute to potentially win games.
Yeah, yeah, but the offensive line, though, they're clearly not done with the offensive line. I thought they were going to keep 10. Now, it turns out John Gaines, and this sucks, their fourth round pick has that metric that shows promise as a starter with that shuttle time, gets all the reps in the offseason as the second team center, and then after one play in the finale, injures his knee, and apparently it was serious enough that he's done for the year. We'll have to find out what that was. I don't think Anna will tell us, but we'll have to find out through other channels what that injury was.
I mean, I assume if he has surgery, we'll hear about it and we'll know at that point what it was. Right?
Yeah, but they, you know, I've been a Yelda Froholt doubter all offseason. I'm sold, okay? I'm sold on him. He's done everything that he's looked fine. He's looked solid. He's even had some flash plays. And then everybody that they bring in gets hurt. They, you know, Gaines is out. They signed Pat Elflein, who has missed so many games over the last 3 years, immediately got hurt, just like Marlon Mack. Now he's on injured reserve. The Cardinals don't have a backup center on their roster. Yelda Froholt is the only center on the roster. That's why I thought that they would have Hayden Howerton. Howerton they'll probably bring back to the practice squad, I would guess, because he was getting third-team center looks. And then in the finale, he was playing left tackle too, and I thought that was the perfect guy that you could have as your 10th offensive lineman. If, for example, Gaines was going to be an eligible to return guy, like he would have been on the roster for a day, put on IR to be, you know, elevate to be activated later on. And so that's why I had them keeping 10. They keep their starting five. They keep Kelvin Beachum. They keep Dennis Daly, whose ankle injury is apparently okay enough. And they keep Marquise Hayes, another guard, which makes sense. And I think he's the guy I had in my prediction as well. And so just the only thing that was different is they didn't keep Howerton, though. The lack of a center, what are they going to do with that? Because is this now when they go out and call up Ben Jones? That we've been predicting Ben Jones all offseason. Is this when that finally happens?
It might be. Or, like I said, maybe they've got names in mind, and they kind of just waited for these cuts to happen and let the string play out. You know, they seem to be, that's one thing I'll give Monty, is he seems to be very patient and diligent with his time frames. I mean, people can say what they want about the DeAndre Hopkins situation. He took his time. Like he didn't force the issue. He tried to find something that he felt was befitting of making that trade. Didn't find anything, wasn't happy. So he was okay releasing. And I think that's how this is going to play out. Like, obviously they need to make a move. You can't go in with just Froholt as your center and no backups, but I feel like they've got a plan in place more so than they did with like the quarterback situation, if that makes sense. I'm not saying they don't have a plan in place.
They've got a plan, Jonathan Gannis, and they feel comfortable with it, but was that really what the plan was going to be the whole time?
Well, and I think that's our thing, you know, going back to that, is like, that's the difference, right? Like, we know that they have to get a center. Like, there's not a question, like, you cannot go into this season with Froholt as your only center. Like, it's just not going to work. So they're going to grab somebody, whether or not we agree with it or, you know, like it, whatever, that's a different story. But on the flip side, you go, all right, well, what are you guys going to do at quarterback? So, like, that's the only difference. But, yeah, I mean, I was surprised that Howerton didn't make it. You know, I'm not sure what to make of Dennis Gailey making it. I mean, do you have an opinion on it? Not really.
I expected Daly to make it. I expected it the whole time. He's lineman six, honestly. You look at how they used the jumbo tight end. He was the guy that brought in.
It just must have been a situation where they were playing him so much to see where he fit best.
Yeah, well, I think they were just getting him. They made sure that he was getting reps at both guard positions so he could be the main backup guard, honestly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, yeah, the rest of that...
It's really interesting that, you know, we talk about this all the time, and balance doesn't matter, right? But to only have, like you said, 23 offensive players, it's different.
It is. And we move to the defensive line, too, where they kept more than we expected. Okay, the starting lineup, that's the way they played it. LJ Collier, Lecky Fotu, and Jonathan Ledbetter. Very cool story, Ledbetter, how he's developed. Lecky Fotu, who made a resurgence. They kept Carlos Watkins, not a surprise. They kept Dante Stills, not a surprise. Kevin Strong, the guy they brought in from the Titans, also not terribly a surprise. I thought they were going to – those are the six guys I would have picked. But then they kept a seventh guy, Ben Stille. Okay. I will say, he did make some plays. He did make some plays, and I think he adds – but he was not really on my radar for that. All at the same time, pretty much when I did, like, the positional previews and player previews, pretty much everyone on the defensive line had a shot at making it. There was no one I'm like, nope, they're not going to make it. Like, except for Collier and probably Watkins. I felt that those two were more or less locks. I thought everyone else was, maybe.
Yeah, and – again, it comes back to, are they doing that because they're confident they can get Stille or Stills on the practice squad in 2 days, right, versus tomorrow?
Maybe. Though I don't generally, if there's something I've learned over the last few years, I don't generally, especially when it comes to trenches guys. Those people don't claim those guys off waivers when they're like sixth and seventh round picks.
No,
defensive backs, especially when they have a special teams flair, sometimes. But
I think the only reason I say Stills maybe is because he's got some pass rushing juice, and so that would be the only reason I could think that they wanted to keep Stille, but they wanted Stills as like a practice squad guy.
I don't know. But
because you look at it, I mean, outside of Collier, he's really the only guy with any juice to rush the passer.
You're absolutely correct.
So, you know, that's That'll be what's interesting. They're going to stop the run, it looks like. Well, they're going to try.
Because, yeah. Now, you know, we'll see how that first unit does, because if it wasn't absolutely all their starters in, wow. Wow, they weren't very good against stopping the run.
And it's really interesting that they went, you know, seven defensive linemen and then seven edge players, right?
Yes. Well, let's talk next. Coming up next on the Rise Up Red Podcast, the Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's move on to the next segment of players, where we talk about the rest of the roster, honestly. The linebackers, the defensive backs, and the specialists. That's coming up next on Rise Up Red. We're back on the Rise Up Red Podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Seven defensive linemen. Seven outside linebackers. Now, I kind of get that, because, and I actually wrote about it. I said that room was going to make the most difficult decisions with cuts, because they're either promising or they really like them. And every one of those seven players, even if, like, publicly you don't love them, but, like, they weren't going to cut Zeven Collins. Dennis Gardeck wasn't going to get cut. Those were locks. B.J. Ojulari, second-round pick this year. Cameron Thomas, third-round pick this year. So promise. And also, notable, built exactly the way they like those edge players, apparently. My J. Sanders, was a question mark for me. I had him off the roster. We forgot to note, goodbye, Rashard Lawrence. We talked about it. We predicted that. But now Lecky Fotu is the only draft pick from 2020 left. Lonely Lecky. But MyJ Sanders didn't play all preseason, didn't play practice hardly at all in training camp, so I wondered where he stood in the pecking order, although it felt like all offseason that he was expected to be a player they would showcase. Victor Dimakaji, he was actually ahead of Sanders on the depth chart for the preseason and played a ton on special teams and made some flashy plays. Like, he wasn't good all the time, but he did make splash-type plays at a few times. And then we know Jesse Luketa. I think he's a player that literally every coach and GM would love. And the reason why he went to the seventh round is just how non-athletic he was comparably. Comparatively with everyone else that was coming out in the draft. But he did it all. Luketa is a guy. They wanted to keep him on the roster initially last year, and then the practice squad ended up being on the roster for a lot of the season. So I get why they didn't cut any of them, but that's a weird way to do it. Are they really going to keep all seven, or do you think maybe Sanders might get traded?
Yeah, I'm wondering what Sanders' role is here, or if it was just genuinely that they like him, he was hurt, and they didn't want to rush him back. That's going to be the question with this one, because – you know, Dimakaji and Luketa seem to have roles. And I think a lot of it, like we said with MyJ, is just he hasn't been out there. So it's tough to gauge what his role is right now without speculating.
Yeah. The inside linebackers, nothing surprising there. The five that they kept were the five that we thought they would keep. Interesting, it appears that Josh Woods has locked up the starting job along with Kaiser White and Chris Barnes. Number three, Zeke Turner, special teams guy, fully guaranteed contract. He was going to be back. And then Owen Papo, who has athletic upside and, by the way, also played gobs on special teams in the preseason.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things that you look at that Papo and really profiles to be a guy that's in the league for a long time, at worst as a special teams contributor. And then, you know, like I told you guys last week with Gannon and Rallis and their background, we'll see what that looks like as the next couple of years, if he can turn into an actual, every down type of linebacker. But yeah, this was not a surprise at all. I think, you know, Barnes and Woods were basically locks as soon as they signed. And then Turner, I just feel like you said, with Jeff Rogers sticking around, he wants guys he's comfortable with.
And he's one of the best, really. Like, he has so many roles. I don't know if we'll ever see him on defense. He developed a small role on defense last year under Vance Joseph, but yeah. And the cornerback position, now Garrett Williams, we're not going to see him for, we'll see what their plan is for him. Apparently they have a plan for him. I don't know if that plan includes this year. He moves to the regular season NFI, so he's got to miss at least four games. And then the Cardinals kept five cornerbacks. You know, Marco Wilson is going to make it, Keytrell Clark, Antonio Hamilton. And I think the when we kind of wondered about the role for Antonio Hamilton, and then we saw that he was remember that first play preseason game, we're like, what was Antonio Hamilton playing that deep in the game? He's first on the depth chart. And then late in the preseason, like the preseason finale, he's one of the guys that's not dressed. So, okay, Antonio Hamilton's got it. And I'm pretty sure now, especially with the way they have the safety room, I think Antonio Hamilton's your nickel, right? If you only have three safeties on the roster, JT goes back to just playing safety full-time, and Hamilton's probably their nickel, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, Hamilton probably makes the most sense. Like I said, the Boyd, keeping Boyd was a little bit interesting to me.
He does have, I think, $400,000 in guaranteed salary. And he's always been a big special teams guy, which was interesting because in the preseason, he didn't do much on special teams in terms
and
of
that's
reps.
What, and that's why I, again, you know, it's always the the first year of a new regime is always tough to figure out. And that's why this was a tough one to figure, because like you said, a guy that has played mainly, I mean, I'm looking right now, so I'm accurate. Outside of 2020, almost all of his snaps come on special teams. I mean, 21, he played 15% of snaps. And then in 22, he played 3% of the snaps, while he played 82% of snaps on special teams. Like, it just feels like he's a guy that's a special teamer, and then he didn't do it. So then you're like, I don't know what to think of this guy. Like, I don't know what to make of how they're using. Do you think that Hamilton is going to play boundary and slide inside, and they'll bring Keytrell in, or is Keytrell going to start opposite Marco?
I think Keytrell's probably going to start. That's what I'm guessing. I'm guessing he's going to start, play the boundary, and stick and hold Hamilton just to the run role in the slot. You know, another possibility with Boyd, I think he's played some safety as well. And so he does give you corner safety possibility. He's, you know, for his first 3 years in Minnesota, you know, Pro Football Reference has him listed as a defensive back rather than a cornerback, and then last year was cornerback. And he came out of the draft as a cornerback, but if I had to look at his snaps, I'd have to pull Pro Football Focus. Maybe he's gotten some safety snaps as well, which maybe
if you kill time off, I'm finding it right now.
So yeah, maybe he the way they did that is to add him one, special teams two, you get them the possibility to, in a pinch, you could put him at safety as well. Because I was surprised at the safety situation that they didn't keep four. And I'm not totally surprised who they kept as their number three, because we knew it was going to be Buddha. We knew it was going to be JT. And they kept Javonte Moffitt. Now, I think I had him on the final roster along with Andre Sachere. I thought Sachere was pretty much a lock because of special teams, because of his time in Philly, because of, you know, his relationship with Jonathan Gannon. But he ended up getting cut. I wonder if he'll be a practice squad guy. But I feel like safety's probably a position they're going to address. Just like I'm pretty sure they're going to address center. They have to address center. I think they'll address running back, but I don't know if it'll be the top priority. Obviously, they're going to put a third quarterback on the roster practice squad, and we know that's going to be Jeff Driscoll, we think. But safety is one of those positions where, especially if JT's playing in the slot and Javonte Moffitt has to play, you have literally nobody on the bench to play safety. Unless, did you find any information on Boyd?
Yeah, so his snap counts were at safety.
Ha-ha!
So but that's the other thing, is that was in 2020. So he played,
did he play a more safety than corner in 2020?
So he played, he played more corner.
Okay.
Let's see. Why is this? Oh, this is what I want. Oh, there we go. I found it now. There we go. So wide corner. Yeah, mostly wide corner in 2020. Interesting. Because I thought it was going to be the opposite of that. Yeah, it didn't. Okay. Yeah, so not a whole lot. And then let's see, last 2021. The snaps last year basically just don't count, right?
Yeah, 37 total snaps. He played slightly more than we did on defense.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, he's mostly played wide corner. So yeah, I guess maybe Kittrell? I don't know what they're going to do. Again, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, but that was the one that confused me the most. Like you said, fantastic, fantastic special teams player. It's just the depth is, I mean, and we knew that the corner was going to be a thin spot on this roster anyways. Unless Christian Mathieu really took a big step and Antonio Hamilton came back to what he was before his
yeah. Yeah, the Mathieu, you know. I thought there was a possibility that Mathieu could get cut. I did.
I really did too.
I predicted he'd be on the roster, but I wouldn't have been surprised because, like Bobby Price. Now, Bobby Price played a ton on special teams. He played a lot. I felt maybe he could sneak onto the roster as a back end guy. But you know, Matthew's long. He's athletic, and you know, he did have some nice stuff. He did regress a little bit, but you know. Not a bad fourth cornerback to have right on. I mean, you wouldn't feel terrible about him playing. They played him last year. And then we get to the specialists, and they don't have a long snapper on the roster, which is concerning, sort of. But, like, this was roster manipulation last year when they did the same thing.
Because, at its finest.
Yeah, because he's not subject to waivers, so they don't have to worry about him getting claimed. Unless he wants to leave and sign elsewhere, he can come back. And whether in practice squad, they play the practice squad game for a couple weeks, but he knows he's going to play. He knows he's going to play, unless this is a case where they found out that, you know, they have someone else in mind. But I don't think that would be the case after the work that they did in the offseason. You know, the secret, their undrafted long snapper, Matt Hembro, out of Oklahoma State, ended up on injured reserve. That, I wonder if they stashed him for next year.
Maybe.
We'll see if he gets an injury settlement, but, like, I wonder if that was a... we like you, but Aaron's back, so... And, oh, you're nicked up. Okay. Injured reserve. We'll kind of see, because that's the one thing you wonder about. But, yeah. So, we don't need to worry about it. Unless they sign somebody, Aaron Brewer is going to be re-signed to the roster in some capacity in a couple of days.
I'm so excited for this to not happen, and then next Wednesday, you and I are like... The hell? Am I long snapping? I'm not even clear. I can't long.
Seth's not eligible for long snapping, guys, right now. Not yet. Yeah. Not yet.
Not until I won't be off the pup until October, guys. I can't do anything.
But I would think that it would be shocking if they moved from him because of the fact that of what we know about
Prater, yeah.
Yeah, I mean they've got the consistency in. You got Brewer. You got Prater, and then Cooney, he won the punting job, which, by the way, Nolan Cooney, number one punt average in the preseason. Woo! And looking at the preseason stats, won that punting job. He's been with the team before, so he is familiar for Prater and for Fanford Brewer, so I'm not totally surprised. Of the guys who were cut, who are your favorites to come back to the practice squad? And I know with a team like this, with the new coaching staff, it's hard to predict. Yes, I get that.
No, it is. But, like, you look at it, let me start by saying these are the guys I do not think would be back. The first is going to be Rashard Lawrence. I just don't see any way Lawrence is back at this point. Just because... Like you said, he wasn't a he's not of this regime. And the way he fell out of favor was really, really odd. Like, I mean, if Colt McCoy hadn't got cut, this would be a bigger story, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because this went from a guy that was their starter and probably their most consistent non-J.J. Watt lineman until Zach Allen, you know, came on last year, to a guy that's just off the roster. And, you know, I've talked about this ad nauseum. Are the knees just that sapped? Like, that happens with these big guys. We've talked about it.
Well,
so, you know,
he's had foot issues. He's had calf issues multiple times.
Right. And he's so big. You know, so I'm looking through the names right now. You know, we talked about Blau. I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up back on at some point this year.
Jeff Driskel, though? I mean,
I know
that makes no sense to me. I do not understand this world after what David Blau did for them this preseason. And they're like, nope.
Yeah. Chashir will be interesting.
So yeah, Chashir, I think, will be back. I'll be interested to see what cornerbacks come back. Cause I think Bobby Price,
I feel like that's a position that they just end up like, they just throw as much at the wall as possible. I told you, dude, I'm a huge Quavion White fan. I would love to see Q come back. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I didn't think he played poorly during this preseason. So, you know, we'll see how that works out. I could see both Togiai or shouldn't say both, either Togiai or Horningford coming back. Like,
technically, I believe Sykovic still has another year of an exemption.
I think you're right with that. So we'll see, you know.
But he doesn't count, so he's a 17th practice squad guy.
Right, exactly. Looking at it, offensive linemen are going to be interesting too, right?
Yeah, because they need depth. they need depth. So my guess.
Are they going to bring back Lacidus, you think? Or is he basically done because...
I think that's where you bring back Howerton.
Okay. Yeah.
Howerton and or Braylon Jones. Then you look at they didn't actually have a whole lot of linemen left for them to, like, Jackson Barton. He's a vested veteran. I don't know. It depend. I don't know what. But and I thought he didn't look great anyway.
No, he did not.
There's the Badata Traore. The guy, I don't know how to pronounce his name quite right, but he's really long and athletic. I think that's a guy that you look at potentially. And you generally, I wonder, because in years past, like of the 16 on the practice squad, I mean, between like 10 and 12 were guys that they already had in the building. And that has especially been a trend since the COVID year. Since 2020, that has by far been the trend, because you invest so much time and reps that, I mean, just look at the last few years with the Cardinals, Vance Joseph and Jace Whitaker, a guy who by all means is not an NFL player. And I say that the most respectful way, but because he was smart and they could rely, like he wasn't going to win physically, but he also wasn't going to lose mentally. And so Vance Joseph could always count on him to play any position in the secondary and at least be in the right spot to avoid busted plays.
Right. And so that'll be, you know, interesting to see how that plays out. You know, this is going to be just interesting because, like you said, most of the time it comes from in-house, but this is such a turnover-heavy thing. They kept all of their... the draft picks outside of obviously Gaines, who's on injured reserve for the year.
He's technically capped and three undrafted guys. So of their, they kept their 9 draft picks, 7 are on the roster and another 3 undrafted guys in DeMercado, Arias and Whitehart. We'll see how many of those guys stick. But, you know, the last time we had significant, like, what was it? In 2018, we had 2 undrafted rookies make the team, three undrafted rookies make the team who have gone on to have very nice NFL careers, and that would be Dennis Gardeck, Zeke Turner, and Trent Sherfield.
Yeah, and that was such a great class. And, you know, people always bring up Tony Jefferson, and I feel like Jefferson even more so is an outlier of guys that, like, end up, you know, making tons of money and being really great, you know, Pro Bowls and all that stuff. And Turner's made some Pro Bowls and stuff, and, you know, so not taking anything away from him. But, like, at the end of the day, that's what you're more looking for in your undrafted free agents, right, is, like, contributors, kind of back end of roster contributor guys who hang around for 8 to 10 years and compete on special teams basically the whole time. And that's what they've gotten. And so it's good to see, and we'll see how it, if that trend continues. I was going to ask you, do you think that they'd bring back McLeod after how well he performed this weekend?
I wouldn't be surprised. But at the same time, how many more outside linebackers do they need in the building? They've already got 7.
Yeah, that's why I was curious, because I don't know where any of these guys, like, I'm really interested to see how the roster looks next Monday, because I think that'll be more, give us a better sign of what it's going to look like for the season, at least this season, before we move forward with this regime, right?
Yeah, and, you know, who knows what we got?
Well, because also, isn't 8 like the bare minimum? Because you have to have 8 linemen active on game days.
Yes,
right?
You have to have 8 offensive linemen active, which is why having only 8 on the roster is weird, and not having a guy who can play center. So somebody's getting some. Like, I'm convinced of this, and by the time this publishes, maybe by the time you listen to the show, maybe the roster move has already happened, or you say, Jess, you're a moron. But I'm convinced that when you have that 52, that means there is a pending unannounced move or an agreed to trade or signing from a guy that wasn't already on a roster, so an off the streets free agent. And if I had to guess, that would be Ben Jones, but I've been swinging that bat for months now, and I still haven't hit the ball.
It only takes one, man. It only takes one.
And if they sign up, it's like, I told you, since March, watch for Ben Jones. But I don't know. But, you know, but we know with the centers available, it's odd garbage. That's not to say there aren't some good players, but anybody who has been good is either old or hurt. And so they go out and get Pat Elflein when he's finally healthy. And what does he do? Like, within a week, he gets hurt. And now he's on injured reserve. Marlon Mack, they signed him. Injured reserve. So way to cash a year's check as a veteran. It's not like they didn't do it nefariously. That's what happens in the NFL. So, because I looked at some of the transactions to see if there was anybody like in Cleveland or Houston or Tennessee. Nothing caught my eye. Maybe Philly safety Kayvon Wallace, who was cut. I could see where he might be a guy they would claim on waivers. But, you know, the Cardinals are number 3 on the waiver claim priority. So mostly guys that they want, they're going to get.
Yeah, and it's going to be really intriguing to see where they go, because, like we said, 27 defensive guys already. Like, are they gonna just field a 20 man offensive roster on offense and practice squad and then have 40 guys on the defensive side of the ball? That's what I said. Those are the questions I have. More like, obviously I love picking the brain of guys and hearing the ins and outs and like the deeper understanding of things, but that's one of my biggest questions, is how much influence did Jonathan Gannon have, because his fingerprints are all over this roster with the emphasis on defense and special teams. Like, he's like, okay, I know you need a third running back. I will give up my 6th corner so you can have a third running back, but I'm not going to give up either of my top 7 front 5 guys for your fourth tight end, so you got to figure that out on your own. Like, it's just it's such a baffling.
You can't have a long snapper on the active roster.
I know. We're going to do the – well, somebody brought up this great point, and I'd love to get your feedback. I meant to ask this to you when we were talking about it. With Brewer's injury history the last couple seasons, right, where he's missed a game or at least spurts of practices during weeks, do you think this was also a little gamesmanship? Because remember, as a vested veteran, his contract guarantees as soon as he makes this roster.
It's – well, it is when – he's active in week one. So okay. that wouldn't matter anyway.
So it doesn't matter. That's what my question was. So
it wouldn't matter today. It matters once he's on the active roster for week one.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I was curious if that was it where like it didn't guarantee his contract the whole time. So they're like, yeah, we'll do this. So
unless they're going to have another long snapper week one, good luck with that. But the way they'd have to get an unproven guy to bring back, who was it? Who is that? Who is that Packers guy? Jack Coons?
Oh yeah, yeah.
The guy that they had they brought in for a couple of weeks before Brewer
got healthy. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. I just don't. Again, we've not seen this before, so we just don't know. And so we'll figure it out together as a group. It makes it more enjoyable that way.
All right. We'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of Secret podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk in the Web Hall. I'll figure out what we're doing later in the week. Might have something on probably. This is probably the only show for this week. I just realized that there's an ASU football game. I remembered. I'll be at the ASU football game Thursday night, and then I'm getting out of town Friday mornings. I won't be back till Monday. So this is the only show. Chew on this for the full week, and then you can mock us for where we're idiots about what we're talking about with roster things. And make sure to listen to our previous shows and subscribe and all that stuff. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rude. This is the Rise of Secret Podcast. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.